Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Another exciting week. I've never seen so much excitement internationally, worldwide. There's a fire every place. The water is boiling every place. It's crazy. From Washington to Damascus to Baghdad to Berlin, it's all over the place. And when you have so many things happening, it bothers me because somebody's going to screw up and there's going to be more fighting perhaps than we already have in this world today. I want to start the show with an issue that's gained prominence in the past week. It's been there, but no one paid attention to it. And I'm talking about these young women who are running away from their countries like the United States, Great Britain, and France to join ISIS. And this was brought to the attention of the world very pointedly this past week when three girls living in London, going to school in London, took off for Syria. They want to join ISIS. And once they get there, their purpose in life is going to be, they said, to marry a jihadist, one of the fighters, and to make babies. Not just one baby. They are going to become breeding machines for the cause. Now, some who go are going also because they want to fight. Very few, but some girls go over and they want to hold that gun and they want to be on the front line with the men, front lines with the men. It isn't just three girls. This has been going on for a year. ISIS has only been around for a year. Already, 3,000 young girls have taken off for Syria to join the ISIS battle. Again, they are 9 years and up. I believe it's under the Quran, 9 years old is an acceptable age to marry. Can you imagine your daughter leaving your house and going to Syria, and she wants to marry a guy and have his babies? By the way, those three girls from England were straight-A students. Now, there has to be an understanding. Why does this happen? Why do these girls want to run to these countries, to Syria, and join ISIS? Number one, it must be recognized, the majority, like 99%, are Muslims. They either just came over, or they're first generation or second generation. Okay, and they want to get back to the Middle East. Why do they want to get back to the Middle East? Well, it seems to be they want to get back to the Middle East and join ISIS because they don't really have friends other than their Muslim friends. I think it's the fault of the Muslim girls as well as the American girls, but there's not been any assimilation by these Muslim women, these young Muslim girls, into our culture, into our society. They still dress to a certain degree like they dressed in the old country. They just keep cover their head and their hair, and they're walking out, and they stand like, you know, they stand like a sign out there, a beacon, saying, I'm a Muslim. And they're not mixing, and it's probably the fault of both sides. They're unhappy. These are young girls, teenagers, because they're not mixing. They see no purpose in their life here. Where are they going? They're going to live in a Muslim ghetto all their lives, and what are they going to do? There's no purpose, and young people must have a purpose. They need a cause. Now, how do all these people get together, these kids? Well, it's the Internet, social networking on the Internet. You and I know we can talk to anyone, anywhere in this world over the Internet. It's very easy, and they're communicating with each other, not only on things like Facebook and Twitter, but just back and forth directly. They get to know each other, and they chat. The people over there say this is a great life, the women over there, and these girls buy it, some of them, and they go over. So with the inequality that they feel exists, they believe class citizens in this country. Being young girls, young ladies, they tend to romanticize. This is a romantic thing. I'm going to go to Syria and I'm going to help ISIS, make a new country. This is a big thing. It's living a fantasy. This is what they're doing, living a fantasy. Again, they're going to help to build a new country. Pure idealism. It's an adventure also. It's fantastic. These are the things, reasons they're going. This stuff's instinctive within them, all these things. Even American girls and British girls have these same feelings and dreams, but they're putting their feelings and dreams into actuality. Now, why? Again, you got to remember, their goal is to go over, marry one of the fighters, and have a family, be a breeding machine. Why Syria? This is interesting. Why do they want to go to Syria? Well, ISIS is over there fighting right now, but ISIS is in a little bit of some other countries, too. Here's the reason why Syria, and this adds to the romanticism of this whole thing. This adds to the fantasy. Mohammed and others told the story. 1,400 years ago, it was prophesied. Now, Muhammad did not prophesize it, and I don't know if anyone knows who prophesied. Muhammad didn't come till years later, maybe 1,000 years later. But it was prophesied back 1,400 years ago that two huge Islamic armies would meet. Two huge Islamic armies would meet, and there would be a great battle near Damascus. Wow, near Damascus. And there would be intervention from countries to the north and the west. Wow, again. So this thing's been prophesied. They think this is the, I'm going to use a Christian term, the biblical war. Okay, this is what it is, the Koran war. But this is, from my terminology, a biblical war. They're anxious to get over there. They're anxious to work for God. They're anxious to set up a new country, to be part of it. It's very exciting, et cetera, et cetera. What about the horror? Chopping heads off, beheading people, burning people alive, throwing men, women, and children alive into pits and burying them alive. What about all of these atrocities? Well, here's the way it's working out. Because don't forget, 3,000 have already gone over there. These three girls are Johnny-come-latelys. It seems that the horror, they become desensitized to all these things like the beheadings, burying people alive, burning people alive. They just become desensitized. They see it a few times and, well, that's the way it's going to be here, and it no longer bothers them. They watch these killings that we see on the internet. They watch, some of them watch it in person. It's a bad situation. Something has to be done. I don't know what. I think we've got to get the people in the schools to mix. I blame the Muslim girls because they have not assimilated. I blame the American girls because they're probably not extending where we have to start to hopefully resolve this problem. I wrote an article on this, by the way, a detailed article, and it comes out tomorrow. My column comes out tomorrow in Conch Life. And for you who may be interested, if you're in this area, the Florida Keys, you can get Conch Life. If you are not, go to my Facebook page on Thursday. On Thursday, from Thursday on, you will see in the upper left-hand column, Conch Life Key West Lou column. Just press the button and you're on your way. Okay? Good article. More detail. All right, let's move on now to the nature of the mentality of our people. We are supposedly sick of wars. The American people feel we've had enough wars. We went into Iraq in 2003. We're just coming out of it. We still got 5,000-10,000 soldiers over there. 13 years we've been over there fighting big time. 13 years. We were in Afghanistan. After a while, we had it up to here. Our people don't want any more wars. They don't want our boys and girls being maimed, and the maiming's big time in these wars today, or killed. So I got to say this. This is Bush's fault, Bush 2. He took us into Iraq in 2003, weapons of mass destruction. They didn't exist, as you know now, as we all know now. But he took us in there, and it said, if you read up on what's happening there, it is said, and it's said by many people, many authors, that the Middle East would not be like it is today. There never would have been an Al-Qaeda. There never would have been an ISIS if we had left Iraq alone, because all the countries around him and all the people were afraid of Hussein. He could keep everybody in line, and he did. He may have been, you know, a despot. He may have killed a lot of people, but he kept all those other countries in line, and there's nobody there to do it today. We should not be sick of wars anymore. It's the only way I can say it. We are in a time where we have to fight again. What ISIS is doing, to me, is comparable to a Pearl Harbor. Not as many, but we're going to have a surprise in this country, they tell us. They're telling us this weekend, maybe on Friday, a big shopping centers are going to somehow be terrorized. I don't know. But we all know, we all have the feeling, Homeland Security suggests this to us, that they're going to come here and fight a little bit. I don't want them here at all. Let the battle be fought in the Middle East, not in my country with my family and friends around here. So what I'm saying is, to keep them out of here, we've got to have a war with them over there, with ISIS. And ISIS wasn't around. Even at the time Obama promised to get us out of Iraq, ISIS, he thought ISIS was a joke, if you recall, when ISIS has been in business here. Within the last year, Obama said on national television, you know, this is, I'm using my terminology, a second-class team, nothing to worry about. They're really a nobody. Well, they're a somebody. And they're moving their asses fast, and they got money, organization, they got women. They're taking care of their soldiers, boy. They're giving, what do young guys want? They want sex, and they're providing the sex for their soldiers all. Something that must be taken care of. It will not be overnight. Otherwise, we're going to have a lot of ISIS fighters, jihadists over here in this country, and maybe our buildings are going to get blown up and there's going to be a war block to block. We don't want it. I don't want it. All right? So think about, we've got to get into this war at some point, not just with air power, but we got to have boots on the ground. Now, something that confuses me. I'm easily confused, though. Congress. This week, last week, they're considering two major bills. And what are those bills? The president has asked for authorization to declare war on Iraq, send 20,000 troops, get us out in 3 years. I think it's wrong for him to put a limit on both things. You're telling the enemy what you're going to do. Be that as it may, they're still discussing whether they're going to give the president permission to wage war against Iraq and what the details are going to be. At the same time that they're doing this, they've got Homeland Security before them. As you recall and as you know, it's all over the news again today, Homeland Security is not yet funded because they had political battles, the two parties, late last year. And we need Homeland Security. I don't know how you put it. This is like one of the first arms of defense for us. And they don't want to fund the 30,000 people that work for them, which means I think the number is 17,000 people go out of work as of Friday if there is not, if the money that, the funding money is not there for Homeland Security. Their budget runs out Friday. This is an inconsistency. How can you be discussing war, and they're really in favor of war, these congressmen, it's the details that are creating a problem, and be against Homeland Security? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Now, I hope this is resolved by Friday. Otherwise, we look stupid and we're acting stupid. And if I was ISIS, that's the time to come over after Friday and do some bad things to us, because the system they'll set up to deal with these things won't be as good. They're losing 17,000 people on Friday. You know, it makes sense, doesn't it? I don't know. It's an inconsistency in the thinking of Congress. That is my point. This is beautiful, too. I'm going to talk about the waste of money. And it bothers me. Let me tell you why this bothers me. while this money is being wasted, we have 16 million public school children in this country who are homeless. 16 million kids are homeless. They live in the woods. They live in cardboard boxes. They live in abandoned cars. And at the same time, we just got these figures in the last 10 days, for the first time in 50 years, more than half of our people, more than half of our public school children live in poverty, 51%. Now, while they're living in poverty and 16 million are homeless, guess what's happening? The executives in the U.S. Department of Health, the United States Department of Health, an agency of the United States government, big agency, fly first class around the world. They fly first class around the world. They're not authorized to do it except in a limited way, which I'll explain to you. I think they're ripping off the system. A study just came out. In 4 years, between 2009 and 2013, $31 million was spent by the Department of Health for 7,000 first class and business class tickets. $31 million, okay? And 7,000 first and business class tickets. 253 of the tickets, the 7,000 tickets, were one-way tickets, which cost more than $1,500. The federal law says it's okay for an agency person like that to fly first or business class if the flight is longer than 14 hours. Then they can bump up to first class or business class, so they sleep better and they'll be more effective, I assume, when they land. The problem is only 1,400 of the 7,000 trips, all right, were more than 14 hours. They did this 7,000 times. They had 7,000 trips, one-way tickets, and yet 7,000. They only needed 1,400 under the law. Look at the money, the difference between these two numbers. While at this time in this country, I'm just going to talk about the children. We all know what the problems are. 16 million children homeless. It's a serious thing. You're going to bed tonight in a bed. And if it's hot, you're going to be air conditioned. If it's cold, you're going to have heat. If you're hungry, you're going to get a snack out of the refrigerator. Where are these kids sleeping? What are they eating? And 51%, for the first time in 50 years, a majority of our public school children are in poverty. Does not make sense to me. Key West, lovely place. I've been there so many years. This is a great place, folks. Come visit us. If you like it, come stay. It's paradise. Be that as it may, we are known for chickens. That's one of the things we're known for. We got chickens. If you've been down here or you read up or you see paintings, we've got chickens all over the place. They run on the streets. You got the hen, you got the rooster, and you got the little baby chicks. And they multiply. They multiply. Let me give you the story on how these chickens work. The rooster, when he goes cock-a-doodle-doo in the morning or whenever he goes cock-a-doodle-doo, isn't saying to you and me, wake up. He's telling the woman, the hen, he's coming after her for sex and get her ass out here. That's what the cock-a-doodle-doo is. Come, I want to have sex. When the hen gets impregnated, it doesn't take 9 months to have a baby chick. It only takes 29 days. 29 days. So they deliver after 29 days. If they're lucky, they'll get 30 days off. I doubt it, and they're pregnant again, and boom, they're having another batch. And the chickens multiply. That's why we have so many here in Key West. We tried to get rid of them down here twice. We failed each time. People say they're cute. I think they're Berwick, Pennsylvania. Interesting occurrence this week. There was a tractor trailer carrying crates of chickens. Somehow, some of the crates fell out on the highway, to the tune of about 500 chickens, we're told. The driver didn't even know it. He just kept going. Now, the chickens are all over the place. The police had to clean them up. Some were alive. Some were dead. It's impossible for them to have gotten them all. And if we got male and female chickens in that, Guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed. Berwick, Pennsylvania is going to join Key West with a chicken population. That's funny, isn't it? But it's true. Let's talk about cell phones. Cell phones and looking up a woman, a female skirt, whether a girl, teenager, woman. So I use the term female to cover all persons of that gender. In the last 2 years, I spoke about this, by the way, 2 years ago on my television show. I also spoke about it on my radio show at the time, because with the advent of cell phones now, they have cameras. And there are some sexual deviants out there who will go into a will go out in a public place, generally in a store, and they'll walk and drop down and take a picture of a woman's skirt and keep going, especially if the woman, the female, is bending over a counter, like a frozen food counter, to get something, and her butt's a little bit up and her skirt's a little bit up. They go, bing, they take the picture and keep going. Well, we are now in Hillsboro, Oregon. We're in a Target store. 61-year-old man, 13-year-old girl. 61-year-old man, 13-year-old girl. He took pictures of her in Targets in several different places up her skirt. And the police phone, they got the pictures. What did the judge do with this guy? 61-year-old man, 13-year-old girl. The judge threw the case out because the law hasn't changed. Cases get thrown out. Why? Well, you're going to laugh. This is the United States of America. The perpetrator, the guy taking the pictures up some lady's skirt, all right, that is constitutionally protected. Would you believe it? It is constitutionally protected for a male to take a camera and take a picture up and try to get a picture of a woman's rump or vagina. Protected. Judge had to throw it out for that reason. It's freedom of expression. Now, one thing that hasn't occurred in these cases, and I'm wondering what's going to happen when it does. All the cases I've seen maybe seven or eight. There must be more, but the only ones I've seen are seven or eight. The women all wore panties. And the judge explicitly said, he made a point of saying the girls, teenagers, women were wearing panties. What happens when a picture's taken with no panties? Because I don't see how the hell a judge can say this is okay. Now, the basis of the law says, though, it's constitutionally protected, freedom of expression. But, my God, that would be horrible. God is good. We live in a wonderful country. God bless America. Why do I say this? And it's all true. I say many times to people when something good happens, nice place, America. Well, again, why am I saying it? We're in Boston, Massachusetts, this couple. They want to go to a sandwich shop and have sandwiches for lunch. They go in, they tell the waiter in advance, we've only got a $100 bill, will you be able to break it? He says, gee, we don't break big bills like that. But go across the street to the grocery store, and they'll break it for you. Well, when the couple got to the grocery store, the gentleman felt bad. He was embarrassed. He just didn't want to ask the guy behind the counter to break his $100 bill. He figured he should buy something. And for some reason, he was motivated to buy two $20 lottery tickets. Two $20 lottery tickets. He won $10 million. $10 million. Isn't that wonderful? $10 million. He's walking away with a net of $6.5 million. God bless America. Okay, I want to talk about Citigroup. Citigroup, big bank, and the type of influence they have in Washington. We know Citigroup is one of the biggest banks, if not the biggest bank in the world. They're the bank that was primarily responsible for what happened in 2008 with the mortgage foreclosures. So the mortgage foreclosures had to occur, all the screwing around with the mortgage financing and everything. Their baby, they were the ones, they were part of the group that said, hey, we'll do this and make more money. They also got, Citigroup got the biggest taxpayer bailout. They paid the money back, but they took a big hit, and they got the biggest taxpayer bailout. Now, we have to control banks to some degree. It's called regulation. And since 1929, the recession of 1929, which was terrible, laws have been passed to regulate banks. And along the way, in the last 20 years especially, maybe 10 years, Congress, whoever he was at the time, has been signing these bills into law to take some of these severe restrictions, as the banks say, away from them. And the banks don't like being regulated. Then came Dodd, whatever, bill 2 years ago, which put further regulations on the bank. And so now before this Congress, and boy, Republican Congress now, the House and the Senate, all Republicans in the majority, what do they want to do? They've decided. They're making a push. It's like D-Day. They're landing in Normandy. Their move is to deregulate banks so the government doesn't have as much influence over them, doesn't have an oversight over them. And where do they start? They have to start in the legislature, which is the Congress, and then they have to get to the president. Well, they're trying to fast-track this in Congress, which means they'll get passed in both houses in a week. And it said Obama is seriously considering signing the bill into law. I say this should not be. I'll also say what I've been saying many times over the last 6 years. I feel in this regard, and I love Obama, I feel in this regard Obama has failed us. The banks, remember Attorney General Holder? Too big to fail. Banks were too big to fail. We couldn't chase them for 2008. Then they were too big to prosecute. Why? If I spit on the sidewalk and it's against the law, I'm going to get arrested. These guys steal billions, if not trillions, of dollars. They don't get arrested because they're too big. They're too big. Well, that's not the way it should be. And I think it sucks. And I'm fearful that these deregulation laws are going to go through because, getting back to Citigroup, Citigroup has a whole new bunch of Washington lawyers and Washington lobbyists. They've hired a number of these people, and they are out there and have been in the last few weeks lobbying Congress and talking to presidential aides to get this bill passed and signed into law. Citigroup has said they've got their people on the front lines. They're fighting to deregulate, and I think they may accomplish this, quite frankly. Well, that's the show for this week. I hope you have enjoyed it. There's so much to talk about every week as I go along. This show, I know many of you don't listen to it Tuesday night at 9. Most of you read, most of you, all of you, I think I got two or three listeners on Tuesday night, but I know there are more than 2,000 of you that listen to the show because it's archived or on Facebook or on YouTube. And I thank you for doing that. And I hope to some degree I open things up for you and make you aware of some things you might not have known. Remember, I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. If you like the show, you will like my book. If you don't like my show, do not buy the book. Definitely you will not like it. Thank you again for joining me. I look forward to being with you again next week.